Welcome back, America. This is To All the Cars I've Loved Before, the podcast where American history and automotive history meet your history. We have another very special guest this evening. Well, you can't, it is evening and you can't see me, but I am, it's very close to Mardi Gras season down here on the Gulf Coast. I am wearing my Mardi Gras crown, purple, gold, and green for those in the know. So welcome back. You'll want to check us out online at carslove.com. Again, carslove.com. In the conversation, see pictures of cars of previous guests, meet previous guests, see pictures of them, and hey, join the conversation. There's a form for if you would like to be a guest. You can meet us, see pictures of us, be part of what we espouse and what we like to get into, which is your stories. Everybody has a story of cars they grew up in, took road trips in with their parents, their first cars, second cars, third cars. Some guests even, our previous guest, last week's episode had, we talked about the most recent car his wife got. So, hey, we all have stories. So before we get into it, I'm going to kick it off to my somewhat esteemed co-host and senior automotive reporter for this very podcast, Doug. I'm Christian, by the way, and this is Doug.
Thank you, Christian, for that wonderful intro. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Yeah, everybody, welcome to carslove.com, or as it's better known as, To All the Cars I've Loved Before, on your favorite podcast platform. And in automotive news, not too much going on today.
We got to be quick because we have a very interesting guest. Very interesting.
Sure. Everybody knows that this Tesla Cybertruck launched late November. People are finally getting their Cybertrucks that are not Tesla employees. And there's lots of speculation out there. Also, just for what it's worth, around the same time, the EPA changed how they verify mileage of electric cars or range, if you will. So that's impacted pretty much every automaker in their claims of what the range is.
Indeed.
Your range may vary, depending on many conditions, as we always say.
At the same time that they're cutting production, Ford is cutting production of Lightning trucks. So it's a very curious dynamic as we move forward in this early time.
It is. And well, the Department of Energy is really pushing hard. U.S. Department of Energy is pushing hard to get those chargers out there. Tesla is actually opening up their charging network to other companies like Ford and others starting this year. So we'll see how that impacts. That might impact a Tesla owner in a negative way, certainly a positive way for other electric owners. But if you have some thoughts, hit the contact us form on our website.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, good stuff. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, we have all kind of ways for you to join the conversation, and you can be one of our guests. And I am very pleased to present this week's guest, who is a close personal family friend of mine. We hang out together. Our kids hang out together. I go over to his house and eat his food. And my good friend, Eric, welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And neighbor, we live in the same extremely exclusive, except for me, enclave near the water in the Gulf Coast of our fair United States. Well, welcome to the podcast. And as we were talking, this is where you get to choose, right? Your conversation about some cars that you've had in your life that have been important to you. And what cars spring to mind, good fellow? Counselor.
Well, based on what we were discussing before we went live, I thought I would talk about my first two cars.
First two.
And my most recent car.
I dig it. Yeah. Are we going to take them in reverse order?
I want to start with my first love.
How old were you?
I was 16 when I got this car.
Oh my God,
I had learned to
drive. Who's got a better life than this guy? Oh
my God. I had learned to drive on my father's work truck. He had purchased a Datsun, if you remember that.
I do. They were little.
A blue Datsun standard mini truck from a painter.
Holy crow.
And he let me go out into the woods or rural areas where we live.
And run into trees. Yes.
No trees were harmed in the making of that film. In Oklahoma, where we lived,
I can't see you in Oklahoma, but yeah, that's where you grew up. Right on.
Although I'm a native Floridian, I spent most of my childhood and teen years in Oklahoma. And all the roads there are on a grid pattern. So every mile you have a road going
north, that's easy.
North, south, or east, west. Yeah.
That's easy.
So not far from the house where we lived were a lot of fields and field fences, but paved roads. Mm-hmm. So he let me drive there. So I was really excited to get my first car. It was for sale just down the road at a place where people parked their cars.
This guy.
And I had my eye on another type of car, but I wound up with the 1977 Triumph.
Oh, it kills me.
TR7.
Oh, my God.
Hard top.
Oh, TR7. Tell us about it. What color? Christian's overwhelmed right now, but I'm going to take control here.
I am overwhelmed. The color was?
British Racing Green.
I mean, this is a car James Bond would drive. My first car was a turd brown Buick from the early 80s. I mean, squarely on the feces side of the color wheel. It was awful. It was awful. I would have killed for that as a first car. Just like James Bond, License to Kill. I would have killed somebody. I would have killed you for your car.
I think Jim Bond or Jim Brown might have driven that car. As I recall, it was around the $2,500 mark to purchase.
Oh, perfect.
We probably didn't pay that. And it was an awesome car, except for the need to double clutch. The transmission had some issues.
Well.
May have had some soft.
No synchros. Synchros get beaten up. They're optional.
And then it had a bad shaking problem at 55 miles per hour.
Well, you know.
But it was a great car. I wish I still had it. It had an interesting provenance when we got it, and especially when we got rid of it.
Great word. French word. Go ahead.
Right. Well, you're steeped in French. Oui. Bonjour. So that was a fun car to drive around. One of my most memorable times in it was driving in an ice storm and learning not to drive in an ice storm because I connected with a curb. It's a little
I cannot imagine that car in an ice storm. Well, I can not imagine driving that car.
There had been an ice storm. There was ice on the road. It wasn't an active ice storm.
It's almost even worse. That's almost even worse because, you know, if there's sleet coming or snow coming, you're not overconfident. But when you hit that black ice, you're cooked. I don't know. I would be overconfident. That's the problem with ice on the roads.
You'll do that when you're young. I don't do that anymore. I don't go out in those kind of conditions. We don't have them often here, but you'll recall
2014, we just celebrated the 10 years of the great ice storm that shut down I-10, the major east-west artery here along the Gulf Coast. Yes.
And we had ice here in our little almost beach community, and no one knows how to drive in it. I stayed home. The government was shut down for 3 days. I was working for the government at the time, and I was happy to stay home. I knew people.
Right on.
And people in my family who went out. But that's that and the great scary flood stuff that was about a year before or after that, the 1,000-year flood.
That was April. That was mid-April of 2014. The ice storm was January 29th of 2014.
Yeah. I thought it was a year apart. But yeah, we had ice
it was 2014.
And flooding. And that's when I decided I need to have a four-wheel drive in the family.
Smart. But I think that's always smart no matter where you live. You know what? Up north, it's compulsory. Let me just squeeze in here. I owned a Ford Expedition for that very reason. When I lived in the DC area for 20 years, and it was just a dream in the snow. Big, heavy, four-wheel drive, sure-footed. You know, if you forgot to put it in four-wheel drive and tried to drive in the snow in two-wheel drive, it was a nightmare. But boy, you slip into four-wheel drive anywhere. Just like the commercials where it's bursting through snowbanks.
Just go slow.
Back to Eric's car, if you will, Christian. So we know it was a convertible. It was a British car.
And it was a hard top. Even more rare than
hard top.
No, it's great because you don't have to worry about the canvas falling apart, which is
any redeeming qualities? Obviously, this is a sporty car. Young man going to high school, driving to high school.
Wow.
Just the ladies. You had to be pretty popular driving a cool car like that.
Well, they go crazy about this guy anyway, but throw in the car, Jiminy Crickets.
That didn't hit until the next car, but the fun thing about the Triumph was the manual transmission, even with the double clutching. It was fun to drive. You know, as I get older, I realize now only 3% of cars manufactured in the world even have a manual transmission.
Huh.
And the ability to drive such a car is getting more and more scarce. I put my older son on dirt bikes so he would learn manual transmissions. And then I had a Jeep that he drove around and really liked it because it had a manual transmission.
It's a life skill.
It is a life skill. Yeah. Speaking of James Bond, you know, you don't just jump in a car and that's the first time you've ever driven a stick.
No.
Or hop on a motorcycle.
Well, he could do it. James Bond could do it. I mean, nobody else could do it.
He's had the training.
That first thing they cover in spy school is defusing nuclear bombs and then driving a standard transmission. I mean, I think that's on the syllabus. It's prerequisite. Standard transmission, also known as millennial theft deterrent for that very reason. Anyway, always good to get a chuckle from the guest, ladies and gentlemen. We're filmed before a live studio audience, which is asleep.
So one time I was joking around with somebody at the Honda dealer and I wanted to drive wasn't a Honda, but a car they had there. And I said, hey, the sales guy was kind of annoying. I'm like, hey, what's this third pedal for? And he's like, get out of the car. I said, just kidding. Of course, I started the car, drove it away.
That's a good story.
I think my second car was a stick shift. My first one was not, but I had some friends who had stick shift cars and there was no stopping me from there. Still have two stick shift cars. So I'm a big fan. It's not fun in traffic, but it is an art.
I understand. But you know what our guest did? He's a very experienced podcaster because he teased the second car. So now we have to move with some expedition to the second car.
We do.
Oh, are you done? Are we done fawning over the Triumph? I mean, we're jealous, that's obvious.
Yeah, I mean I think Eric shared some good stuff. It's awesome.
Love it.
First car.
How heavy was the hard top before we move on? How heavy was the hard top?
Oh, no, it wasn't a Targa top. It was a coupe. The top.
It was a fixed top, Chris.
Fixed top. The next car has the Targa top.
Oh.
That's why
let me be quiet and not tip the hand. Sorry, second car.
Yes, please. Let Eric continue.
I have to tell you the post-provenance of the TR7. It's a short aside. Mm. My father and I traded it to a professor that he worked with at a junior college. The art professor, the bohemian art professor, needed a car that his girlfriend didn't know or his wife didn't know about, his ex-wife. So we traded that car for an acre of land on Highway 82.
No.
North of Tallahena,
Florida.
That's
not the land you still own.
Tallahena, Oklahoma. I still own it.
No.
I would love to put a Triumph on posts so that for a landmark so I can find the darn thing.
It shall be done.
Highway 82 is a motorcyclist highway. They like to ride it because it's near the Tallahena Scenic Drive, which goes from Tallahena, Oklahoma to Mena, Arkansas, and has beautiful, what they call mountains. They're really big hills, but the season changed and the leaves. So, you know, that's part of the interesting post-provenance of the Triumph.
That is a great story. Nice postscript. Nice postscript. Yes, very good.
The follow-up car, well, the one that I really wanted, was a Porsche 914 Signal Orange.
My God.
It had a 2-liter engine, not the 6-cylinder, because they in Germany, they rolled them down the same production line as the 911. But it also had a manual transmission. Very fun car. Very awesome to drive. Pulled plenty of girlfriends into the Porsche. And it has an interesting postscript also. But that was had for the princely sum of $3,250. Which was part of some money I earned from one of my father's oil speculation companies.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I see where your kids get their work ethic, starting companies, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
I was going to guess that maybe they struck oil on that piece of land that they traded the Triumph for. Who knows?
No.
Might be oil there.
Not quite.
The only acre in Oklahoma that doesn't yield oil is this guy here.
Oh, no, it may yield oil. I had 20 acres that were nearby that an oil company did pay me a royalty to put a road on. But a lot of times you don't get the mineral rights.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's right.
I don't believe I own the mineral rights on the acre and no one's offered me a check yet. But they can certainly call any time and offer me a check.
We need to look into that. And if they're listening to this podcast, we're coming after you, ExxonMobil. Need to be shaken.
So the 1974 Porsche 914 had a Targa top. Removable top. It went in the back trunk because it was mid-engine, and it also had a front trunk where the gas tank was. So it's kind of weird to open the front trunk or boot to fill up the gasoline, which was less than a dollar a gallon. And Oklahoma's an oil producing state.
Oh, so
It went over a dollar a gallon while I was driving it. And it actually made the move with me here to Florida. I drove it from Oklahoma City to the fabulous Gulf Coast of Florida.
Now, how long did you have that one?
I didn't have it that long. I think I sold it in the summer of 1988. It was very expensive to maintain.
I can imagine.
It had a problem vapor locking. I got some tickets and insurance got expensive.
Oh.
And I had some other cars to drive. So that's for another podcast, I think. But the 914 went to a nice young man from the Northeast who was here with his family on vacation, and they had enough cash to put together.
Come on.
The $3,250 that I sold it to him for with cash and traveler's checks.
Wait a minute. That's more than you paid.
No, I think it was even. But I learned how to do some mechanic work with German
subtitles. The most interesting man in the world.
Yeah.
Love it.
And, you know, the problem really with that car was the vapor locking. It's not a problem in Munich where it stays pretty cool. But down here in the heat, it was a problem.
Yeah, right.
Because the fuel injection that they used had a problem when the air-cooled engine got hot. So a lot of people did a carburetor conversion on that. But I had not done that. And although I wish I still had that car, I'm glad I don't.
So, Eric, was that, just make sure I understood, was that the 914-6 or it was the 2-liter 4, the bigger of the 4-cylinder?
It was a 2-liter 4-cylinder. No, my father had an investor and friend who was a veterinarian, and I think he had 7 Porsches, maybe 11. He had a stable full of them.
That's when you have a problem.
Oh, he had a solution to his problem. But he advised my dad not to get me the 6-cylinder because I was going to die. And I drove the 4-cylinder fast enough. I don't drive those speeds anymore. I just don't enjoy the parasympathetic nerve response coming down from it. But it was a really fun car. You know, it handled like it was on rails, to quote a movie, because of that mid-engine placement. Just super fun.
Sounds fun.
You know, I was a lot skinnier, so I could fit in it. The target top was fun to take off and on. I would like to have another target top car, but there are lots of cars. My current car has something like a target top. But
hang on. One of our fans is, oh no, it's just my co-host. I have a quick fun fact to share. Let's hear it. We're at 19 minutes into this epic voyage, so we need to skip along briskly to the third car.
We just need you to stop talking so we can do it.
Let's do it.
So, if you will. So, Eric, I'm a car connoisseur, so fan of Porsches as well. So I wanted to see if you probably do know this. The 914 came out after the 911, and part of the reasoning for it was, it was made by Volkswagen. It was sold as a Volkswagen in Germany, but sold as a Porsche in the United States. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And when it first came out, it had the same engine as the Porsche 356. I think it was a 1.6 liter, if you will. That's why I asked about the 2-liter. And the reason they slotted it in is because the 911 went so upscale in cost, they needed something else kind of in the middle. And even along the way, or at the low end, even along the way, they had a Porsche 912. They actually offered it twice, which had that similar engine, probably to what you had, 2-liter 4-cylinder.
It was a great little car. You know, I've heard it referred to as a super Volkswagen, a super VW.
Yep. Just a super car.
And I've seen in California where they make electric conversions, and that seems to solve the vapor lock issue. I think it would be an awesome car to have as an electric conversion, but they are very low to the ground. They're very
small.
Very small cars. Yeah. I think it weighed 1,453 pounds, if I'm remembering it correctly. Yeah, very light car.
Yeah.
Very light.
Very light.
Boy.
Two-seater. Two-seater. Coupe.
Yeah, and really awesome car. Air-cooled engine. Vapor lock. Understandable.
Yeah.
which led him to ride off into the sunset into the third act of this voyage, which was the...
Well, I'm going to skip ahead almost three decades to the current car.
Yes, but
which is special because my wife bought it for me. It's the white Cadillac CTS.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful automobile.
With a 2-liter turbocharged engine and a sunroof. And the, you know, all the windows roll down and roll up with a punch of a button. You know, you touch the button once.
I like that feature.
I didn't know it was a sports car, a sporty car, until my nephew and my son told me it's fast. I said, what do you mean it's fast? I bought it for the ride because it does have a Cadillac ride. It's the most comfortable seat I own, including my reclining couch at home. But that's just a great car because it has all the modern features and amenities. I don't have lane departure warning.
What year is this?
It's a 2019.
Yeah.
It has fewer than 30,000 miles. So I really like that. I got it because its predecessor Cadillac had someone had smoked in it. So I got this. I got both of them. But that it's a white, kind of a pearlescent white. So it's pretty
beautiful.
I have dreams of a red Escalade, but this one is just so nice. And, you know, traveling on the highway in it is just beautiful. You know, a friend of mine who's a car aficionado that I'm going to try to get on with you told me that, you know, they're doing the turbo small displacement engines to meet some of the mileage requirements. And it makes sense because that joker gets 30 miles to the gallon on the highway.
But sporty, fast, wonderful, and it fits into that cafe average of the entire car manufacturer's portfolio.
I think it's ruined me for other car brands.
Yeah. Hey, that's really good. It is. I've driven it. I've driven his car. Beautiful car. Very fast. Very well appointed on the inside. Very good. We're at 23 minutes into the voyage here, so we probably need to wrap this up. As I said, Eric, the most interesting man in the world. His stories have stories. We'll have him back in season two, that I promise. So as we wrap up here, any parting thoughts on your part, so to speak?
If anybody needs an attorney in the Gulf Coast, Florida area, I'll take cars for fees.
Absolutely. Contact me
through the podcast. I'm certainly glad you had me on. I enjoy these stories. I think you and your boys and my boys have heard some of them, but not all of them. You know, we got to talk about Pawpaw's cars.
Exactly.
You know, all the interesting journeys.
From parents to children to their children to, you know, and I hope to have my father here on the podcast here at some point. So you are a great guest. Thank you so much for coming in on short notice.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. As always, catch us online at carslove.com, carslove.com. Join the story. Meet more about Eric. Meet more about us. Join the millions of Americans who never heard of this podcast before. There you will find archived editions, pictures of us, pictures of other cars. Doug, do you have anything to add in before we close out here?
No, I think I just want to thank Eric. You know, there's some great stories. I wish we had more time, but we do have more episodes and more seasons coming up. So find us on your favorite podcast platform. And just remember, to all the cars I've loved before, carslove.com. We have an intake form, as my co-host would say. Drop some ideas out there. Tell us about your car. If you want to be on the podcast, we'd love to have you.
It's your show, America.
Not really.
Love it. Thank you. All right. See you next week, guys.
See you next week.